Hey, everybody, welcome to the Unproducible Podcast, where in which we take the screenplays that Hollywood never made and we shine a new light on it. My name is Andrew Colma, and together with my cohorts here, they can introduce themselves.
I am Greg Richardson.
Who's going to be next?
Yeah, I think it's
only me. Okay, yeah. My name is Nick Benjamin. I am back from the flesh, and my favorite color is green.
Back from the flesh?
Back in the flesh? In the flesh.
There you go.
In the flesh. Yo, I'm tired. Give me a minute.
There you go, booby.
Cool. I'm Byron.
Sorry, Byron, go for it.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm Byron, and my dream is to be the voiceover for the Ford F-150 commercials.
One day.
All right.
And I am Alex Jules James, and I'm already dying again.
All right, rip. Anyway, like I said, this is a podcast where we take the films that Hollywood never makes and we should give it some new life, for better or for worse. Sometimes they're shit, sometimes they're good. Like last week we did Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian, and that was shit, and that good. Fucking broke us.
Yep.
But this one, let's see how it works out. Today,
somebody is back today.
Who officially picked this one out?
This was my pick. We were going to go with an original or another one, but I decided to go with Uncharted Drake's Fortune. Yay. Which is written by David O. Russell, one we know from American Hustle and Joy and Silver Linings Playbook. It's definitely one that I've been meaning to or wanting to choose for a while. And I'm excited. Stoked to get into it.
We really need to stop announcing our next script, because it's been wrong precisely 50% of the time.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably a good idea. Let's let people guess what they think.
Yes.
I mean, we didn't announce the next one. We just said we were excited. Did we really?
We specifically said it was going to be Halo.
Oh,
but it's not Halo.
Guys, nope. I promise you, Halo is coming. I promise.
Yeah.
It's not the Showtime show. It's the very, very great
Paramount
feature. Yeah, Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus, home of Halo and the Rugrats reboot. So,
Yeah, you know, they're creating some serious content, guys.
But yeah, I guess speaking of serious content here, like we said back in the day, David O. Russell here, back when he was getting choked out by George Clooney and smacking Lily Tomlin around on set.
Jesus.
If you don't know, this guy is apparently an asshole to work with.
Oh, he's a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even want to go into some of the shit he's done. It's too bad for this podcast. Christian Bale had to defend Amy Adams on the set of American Hustle, like physically. So that's...
Oh my God.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Ansel culture. Where the fuck you been? We got an Ansel walking around.
This is going to be a very interesting script.
Bostonian asshole. Yeah.
You didn't get out after the working pedophile last script. You got David O. Russell, the fucking beater McBeater, just going around slogging actors.
Woo!
And touching his niece. That's a thing that happened.
Oh my God.
Jesus. Not surprised, but Jesus.
Yep.
But anyway, this foul boy over here, he was going to do an adaptation of the Uncharted series over at Sony, in which he wanted Mark Wahlberg, Marky Mark himself, to play Nathan Drake. And if that's not weird casting, I don't know what the fuck is.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I mean, he was good. He was good in the, what is it, The Fighter?
Yeah.
He's good in a lot of things. Mark is great. Is an underrated actor, I think.
He's great.
I just watched
Drake?
Three Kings. Yeah. He's amazing in it, you know?
But as Nathan Drake, the smart Alex shit talking. I mean, Mark Wahlberg.
Would you describe it like that? Yeah.
But he's more like snarky shit talking. He's not really like. I've only played the first game, so I don't know how he is in the other ones. But
I mean, he fits more of like a Malcolm Reynolds. Nathan Fillion from Firefly.
Yes! Nathan Fillion is Nathan Drake!
No, 100%. Nathan Fillion was born to play Nathan Drake.
He
and
was.
Unfortunately, he was way too ahead of his time, and age got the best of him. Sorry, Nathan Fillion, but it's true. If you were maybe 15, 20 years younger, Firefly Days. If you were in your Firefly Days,
ooh, yeah,
would have been the perfect
yep. casting yeah. choice. But he was great in that little short movie they made for in so Uncharted. Good. He did a bang up job. So I will give good. Him that.
But anyway, he left the project for whatever reason. This never got made. So now, let's give it some new life. Let's see what the fuck is up. We could talk about the script in detail, but that's just no fun. So we're just gonna read out the script like how it's written. But
we're gonna read it really fast this time.
Again, we don't know if this is the real script. We just found a script that
for
just
legal
says
reasons.
It says David O. Russell, but could be written by anybody.
Yep,
David O. Russell from Canada.
But anyway, we're going to be reading all the parts, such as like I'll be playing the parts of Nate. Scout, Sailor, Director, Merc, and Merc 1.
And I will be playing Sea Hand number 1, First Mate, Navarro, Carl with a K, and Pirate.
And I will be playing Sully, Sir Francis Drake, Paolo, Malcolm, and Pirate 1.
I'll be playing Sea Hand 2, Eddie, Roman, Thug, a huge guy, and a pilot.
And I will be playing Elena, Seahand, Frank, who is a girl, who is also a villain, and Merc.
But anyway, other than the dialogue, there's also another part of the script is the action lines. And for those who don't know, action lines are the parts of the screenplay that just basically they're just paragraphs telling what goes on, like what character is doing, yada, yada, yada. And usually
blocking,
during,
if you will.
Yeah. And usually during read-throughs, one person and one person alone is assigned to read that, but since that's no fun, we have a device called the Wheel of Death, which is where we just put all of our names on a spinning wheel, and we spin it, and whoever it lands on has to read 25 pages or so to divvy up the load. And with that, the first person who reads is...
Oh, I forgot about the tension of the Wheel of Death.
Dun, dun, dun.
Are you going to be first?
I'm reading.
Oh,
shit. Andrew. All right. All right.
Let's go.
Y'all ready for this?
Okay, sorry. All
right. Let me get my Morgan Freeman voice going on.
Oh, God.
Watch it be really high-pitched.
Uncharted, Drake's Fortune by David O. Russell. Based on the video game Uncharted Drake's Fortune by Naughty Dog. Super the title! British flagship, the Defiance. 3,000 miles west of Chile, South Pacific Ocean, March 13th, 1597. Exterior, the Defiance Bridge Day. A gray fog so thick! We can only see the forward.
Oh my god, here we go.
My god, it's not even capitalized. You just
do be thick, though.
Be thick.
So thick. Oh,
god
so
damn, that shit's not, thick.
That's a shaft.
Shaft!
That shit collapsed.
From over the gunwale. Right?
Yeah. Gunwale.
Drop a canvas-wrapped dead body into the sea. The crew shares conspiratorial glances, haggard from malnourishment and months at sea. They arm themselves. Cut to the map. An intricate, hand-drawn sea map held down by cannonballs. In fact, beyond intricate. It is incomprehensible. Lines, dots, and arrows go to and fro without so much as a word written on it. You pull back to reveal... Interior, Captain's Quarters, Day. Standing over a map is Sir Francis Drake, 53. Hardly the stiff-necked aristocrat he is. He is as rough as his crew, with the bedroom eyes of a rogue.
Captain Drake, crew would have a word.
Sir Francis turns to see the angry crew standing at his door. He picks up his pipe and a match, unconcerned.
Would you? Just one?
14 ships lost, quarter rations for months, and the stores are as bare as Adam.
And even the navigator has no idea where we lie.
The Queen herself was giving us this mission, and I've sworn an oath to its secrets.
Stuff the Queen, and stuff your oath, sir. You lead us to death as sure as the sirens do.
Sir Francis stays calm, amused even.
And I take it you propose an alternate course of action.
We propose to turn the ship around.
Sir Francis strikes a match, supremely calm. He lights his pipe and takes a long drag.
Over my rotting corpse.
As you decide, Captain.
Up come the swords and knives. Sir Francis delivers.
Oh my god.
More the sword part than the knife part.
Bitch, don't you get premature on me.
Hey, size doesn't matter, okay?
Sir Francis delivers a vicious kick to one of the barrels that forms a leg for his map table. Okay. Black powder pours out of the hole he created. The crew realizes it is a keg of gunpowder, as are the other three legs of the table. Everyone freezes. Sir Francis holds the lit match over the spilling powder. Sir Francis still grins as he addresses his terrified men, himself as calm as a cucumber.
Now you listen to me, you faithless dogs. We will not turn. We will not tarry. We are the finest crew ever to sail God's blue. We will go onward, or we will go to hell. But I'll bargain with the devil himself before I turn tail from such treasure and we're after.
Suddenly, something lands on the window ledge behind Sir Francis. A bird. Everyone seems shocked except Drake.
Land ho, lads. Man the guns.
Interior, Defiance. Gun deck. Day. Below deck, the cannon doors are yanked open, gun crew shouldering cannons into firing position, peering out, hoping for some sign of good fortune. Exterior, Isla Oculta, right?
Isla Oculta, yeah.
Yeah.
Isla Oculta, Spanish port city.
As if I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. The Defiance emerges from the thick fog into a wide lagoon surrounding a partially sunken Spanish port city. Huge cracks splinter the fort's foundations, and a black powder marks bound. Though the crew waits tensely for an alarm, none comes. No one and nothing moves, save an oddly swirling green mist that eddies about the fort. Ship ho! Up ahead, a half-sunken galleon crests like shattered mountain from the surface of the lagoon. Interior, exterior, half-sunken galleon, day. Prow down, only her poop deck and mizzenmast rise above the water. Sir Francis and his first mate stand on the ruined ship's deck, carefully examining her wreckage.
Any clue to who sunk her? I'd like to know who beat me to the task.
One of the sea hands joins them from the hold below.
The cannon holes I found shatter out, Cap'n. They sunk her themselves.
What?
Found the captain! Spanish epilat. Right?
Yep.
All right. Covered with blood and gore, it's about the only recognizable thing on the shredded body of the Spanish captain.
Not a captain, an admiral. That's Alvarado. What's left of him?
Did something eat his face?
Suddenly, a figure whisks past the window outside. All the men draw their muskets.
Something. That's still here.
Submerged hole.
Calling it, the vampires are coming. Mm-hmm.
Sir Francis and his men creep through the knee-high water, guns drawn. The cavernous space it is pocket-marked with bloodstains and powder blasts of a battle.
Spanish
subtitles.
Surrender yourself, friend. We are not after you. Just your queen's gold. Olé.
Suddenly, a dark form leaps out, ripping through the sea hand. There's a flurry of tearing sounds as Drake and his men turn to shoot.
May the Lord have mercy upon our souls.
Bam! We hear the sound of gunfire as we pull up from the half-sunken galleon to reveal the entire lagoon. And an entire fleet of Spanish ships sunken beneath its surface. Cut to aerial shot, Favela Vidigal. Day. We soar over Brazil. A dense Brazilian slum perched vertically on the side of a cliff overlooking a pristine beach dotted with five-star hotels. Super the title. You could just say super title or whatever.
Or just super. I feel like a lot of people just say super and people understand super the title.
Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Favela Vidigal. Today.
Oh shit, right now?
Yeah.
Right now, this minute.
Oh, it's happening right now,
bro.
Let's go.
The aerial shot comes to rest on a battered, dilapidated wooden structure hanging out over the cliff precariously. We move through an open window and into interior Bar Conrado Day. Lazy ceiling fans barely stir the air. Rough patrons populate the rundown bar, playing dominoes, running women, or simply nursing their drinks.
What does running women mean?
Probably chasing.
They're fucking jogging, man. They're jogging around the bar.
All right, they got like their
they're yoga fucking pants. Running, running strain on them bitches.
I was gonna say running women's probably like flirting with, I don't know, like, yeah, like going up and doing trying to start some shit. I don't know.
Well, maybe.
With his back to the window we came in, we find Nathan Drake, 30s. Grungy t-shirt, jeans. He's the only gringo in the place, but nobody takes him for an easy mark. Okay.
I like how the whitest person ever in this fucking Hollywood is writing this. And he's like, he's the only gringo. I'm like, okay, David Russell. Sorry, go on.
He's got the supreme confidence of a man who's figured all the angles in the eyes of a guy who's seen it all. I mean, not really. Nathan's the type of character who believes he's figured out all the angles, but in reality, he ain't gotten really shit.
Yep.
He's just very, he's, his face says confidence, but like his
not even close.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Sitting down at the other side of the table is Atok Navarro, 30s. Of mestizo Indian descent, he sports a knife scar on his left cheek and a scowl to match it on the right. Two of Navarro's mestizo thugs, 20s, huge guys with stone monuments for faces, stand flanking him.
Remind me to pick the place next time.
It's a hidden gem. You got to try Paolo's Moqueca, right?
Moqueca.
Moqueca.
Sure.
he does something with the plantains. It's unbelievable.
I am not hungry. You brought the cash?
That depends. You brought the map? Another of Navarro's thugs steps into the bar, making a beeline for Navarro. He whispers in his ear.
He's not in his room or on the boat. He must have it with him. Ho, ho, ho.
From the thug's jacket, Navarro pulls a map case. He gingerly unfurls the map on the crude wooden table. It is a sailing map, hand-drawn, antique. We recognize it as similar to Sir Francis' strangely marked map.
Oh, shit!
No way.
Gasp!
Nate pores over the map, his eyes filled with excitement.
I was surprised when I found out you were looking for this one. Hardly a remarkable item. No attribution, no location, not even a date on it. May I ask what you think it is?
Ask away? Navarro smiles. Nate's not about to let on what he knows. Nate leans down closer to the map, inspecting closely. And when he does, a narrow rawhide cord around his neck spills out from under his shirt. And on the cord, an old silver ring. Navarro's eyes go right to it, mesmerized. It's genuine. I was expecting you to try and sell me a fake. He reaches around his waist and pulling out a transparent money belt, ringed with stacks of $100 bills. Navarro raises a finger. His thugs draw their pistols.
Never, old friend.
Mate straightens up, cash in hand, only to be staring down the barrel of three guns. Problem, old friend?
More like a wrinkle. Instead of getting the map, why don't you give me the key?
Key? What key?
The ring around your neck. The one that can interpret the map.
Nate smiles. Atok, you shifty bastard. You know more than you're letting on, huh?
Maybe a little, Nathan. Turns out we may be looking for the same thing after all. Same thing is all. And despite how you amuse me, my employer likes to keep his overhead low.
His men cock their pistols.
Shaft.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's a shaft.
You should know, I'm not just going to walk away from this one. I spent half my life trying to find this.
Is that so? Strange. Because this is more than just business for me as well.
Nate snaps his fingers. Guns cocking, Navarro sees eight of his toughs around the bar leveling guns at them. You know the great thing about favelas? Labor costs. Can't get a better deal on the gunmen in this day and age.
How much did you pay them?
About 50, U.S.
That was always your problem, Nate. You never had enough money to do it right. That is why I offered them 100.
Nate's smile drops. He realizes all the guns are pointed at him. He singles out the bartender, Paolo. Really, Paolo? You too?
Sorry, Senor Nate, but with the recession.
Unbelievable. Suddenly, Nate slips and falls, or so it seems. Actually, he drops down on his back, hands positioned behind his head so he can kick the underside of the table up and into Navarro's face, splintering it. The two halves of the table continue upward and hit the pistols of Navarro's men, deflecting them as they fire. Their shots narrowly miss a rolling Nate. There we go. But their bullets rip apart.
What's he rolling on?
Roll, did you say, hey?
He's literally doing, like, somersaults. Mm-hmm. I'm rolling.
I feel like it's like with the stop, drop, and roll thing for fire, and he's just rolling.
Probably.
No, he's doing like a full-on Sonic the Hedgehog roll, guys.
Oh, he's homing in on Navarro's face?
Yes. But their bullets rip apart the drop's money belt, revealing it's mostly filled with just folded paper. Meanwhile, the map, which was on the table that was kicked into the air, gets caught on the rotating blades of one of the lazy ceiling fans. The thugs shift aim as Nate rolls under the corner of the bar and out of view. He pulls out one of his two silver-plated 9mm pistols from behind his back. The thugs spread out, looking for an angle where they can see him. Nate pops up and unleashes 3 quick shots, dropping back down behind cover before anyone can shoot back. The rest of the bar. Navarro looks around at his men, trying to see if any are hit. All are still standing. Navarro smiles.
Want me to show you how to use those?
Then all 3 of his thugs sway and drop dead. I'm good, thanks. Navarro whistles. Into the bar come 6 more thugs, these ones armed with submachine guns. Navarro points out Nate's location at the far end of the bar. Paolo sees the submachine guns aimed his way.
No!
He hits the floor just as automatic fire carves up the far end of the bar and the wall behind it. Nate stares through the Swiss cheese holes in the bar, his eyes connected with Paolo, similarly prone. Can we agree you made a mistake, Paolo? Paolo doesn't respond, terrified, and then Nate sees the reason why. Paolo's wife is huddled over a tortilla press on the floor just on the other side of the bar from Nate. The automatic fire missed her head by inches. The thugs adjust aim to fire again at Nate. Paolo's eyes voice a silent plea. Wait! Wait! Nate dives away from the cover. He crosses the nearly empty bar floor, automatic rifle chewing at his heels, almost catching up. When Drake throws his legs ahead of his body in a dropkick, knocking over the lone standing table in the room, giving him mere inches of cover as the bullets catch up with him.
Woo!
They eat up the table, and one gets through and catches Nate in the arm.
Poor table.
Rip.
What did the table ever do?
Yeah. It was the last one.
Mm-hmm. That son of a bitch. He winces in pain. Navarro smiles, holding the money belt filled with the blank paper.
Just another gringo coming to rip off the natives, eh, Nate? I suppose that's what I'm to expect from a street rat like you.
Nate searches for some means of escape. Behind him, the rear wall is Swiss cheese. He fires 2 more bullets and a large chunk of the wall falls away. A gust of wind blows through the large hole. Okay, you're not going to take that opportunity. Okay.
Shaft. It lifts.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I was trying to understand how to pronounce my next line. So
okay.
I can tell you how to pronounce that.
I think I got it.
I'm not going to lie, though. I just have a side tangent. I am Brazilian, and all of these fucking, like, stereotypical Brazilian shit that I'm reading, like, mm-hmm. like the tortilla, what the fuck? Like, that is not a Brazil. I'm sorry. It's not at all. And Rio de Puta is, I'm just saying right now, not Portuguese.
Nope.
It's mm-hmm. Okay. I'm just, all right. Well, all right. He could very well be like Mexican or Spanish or from Spain or something, right? But like,
Navarro said he was a Mestizo Indian.
Yeah.
Which is Mexican, I believe, right? Or at least
right.
Central American.
Yeah. But then the tortilla thing kind of caught me out. Okay, mm-hmm. Continue. I'm getting
anyway. So far, my note or gripe with everything so far is that they kind of have Nate right, but his dialogue is just slightly off.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like he should be way more snarky he's got, and sarcastic.
He's got kind of like the Peter Pan vibe going on right now. It's like Peter Pan fighting Captain Hook at the moment. But like,
a little bit.
But like Nathan Drake doesn't give a fuck. He just shit talks.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't had enough lines yet. Maybe we'll get to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let's continue.
A gust of wind blows through the large hole. It lifts the map off the blade of the fan, pulling it to the opening. It wasn't what Nate had planned on.
No!
Navarro sees what Nate saw.
Hijo de puta.
Nate jumps out from behind the table, racing from the map. Navarro and his men shift aim. The map flutters out the hole, but Nate dives out of the hole after it, into midair. For a beat, Navarro and his thugs listen for a blood-curdling scream or some loud collision. None come. They race to the window. Nothing but a 100-foot drop to the beach. No sign of Nate. Creak, a board beneath Navarro shifts. We hurtle under the bar. With the map in his teeth, Nate hangs on for dear life to a lone support beam jutting out of the steep hillside. Back in the bar, Navarro looks down at the cracks between the wooden floor slats. He catches a glimpse of the shadow moving down there.
He's below!
The thugs shift their aim and unleash a fusillade of lead, chewing up the floor. Under the bar, gun in one hand, wooden beam in the other, and the map still in his teeth, Nate can only watch the bullets chew up the support beam he's holding. The bullets rain down. The support beam cracks and splinters with the map in his teeth.
This shit's gonna hurt!
The beam snaps and the entire structure starts to lean, moaning as it teeters toward oblivion.
Shaft.
There we go.
Yay!
Yeah, we got one.
Back in the bar, the floor of half the bar curves downward. Navarro dives onto the structurally sound part of the bar, but two of Navarro's thugs aren't so lucky. Crack! Half the bar rips apart from the other half and dangles over the cliff face. Under the bar, Nate lets go of the beam. He free falls. 20 feet below, he slams into a tin roof.
Ouch.
Pure tin shack continuous. Slam! Nate hits the bamboo floor hard. Shards of the tin roof everywhere. Just then, Nate looks up. His eyes go wide in fear. He dives 3 feet to his left as half the bar comes crashing down on top of him. Nate pulls his arms. Oh shit, this is all capitalized, so.
Yes.
Nate pulls his arms and legs into his body, making his profile as small as possible, and he passes harmlessly through an open window of the falling bar.
Why was that all in caps?
I don't know.
Oh my god.
Because the entire time David was just like, ah, like screaming while timing that.
Oh my god.
Interior, exterior, destroyed bar section, continuous. Now inside the remains of the bar, he comes face to face with the two thugs who slowly rise, creak, crack.
Nice.
Oh no. The hillside gives away and the destroyed bar continues sliding down the hill, plowing through every obstacle in its way.
Shaft.
Oh my god.
All three men try to balance onto the undulating floor like they're on an immense surfboard. Oh god, surf. I'm getting flashbacks of Beetlejuice Goes Hawaiian.
I was about to say the same thing.
little bit of an unintentional reference.
Yeah. Throwback. Fortunately, the thugs train their weapons on Nate. Nate's guns are in their holsters. He takes a deep breath.
Adios, pendejo.
Suddenly, a telephone pole shoots to the wall behind Nate, flying at the thugs, causing them to duck. When they come back up, all they see is Nate holding a rung of the pole, using its momentum to carry him into them. That's a sentence. Nate kicks one of them in the face and tackles the second. The remains of the bar drop another 20 feet, landing onto a steep, grassy slope where it picks up speed. Nate slammed hard against the floor. The thug above him God damn it. Swings his gun around. Nate pushes off the wall, launching himself at a thug just as he fires. The bullet misses Nate by inches. Nate swings his feet ahead, and they land into the thug's chest, catapulting him out the window of the bar. Exterior, the bar above, continuous. At the edge of the broken bar, Navarro sees one of his guys fly out of the bar and gets crushed by it. The bar gets crushed, or does Navarro get sad?
I think he gets crushed by it?
One
of the thugs gets crushed by
it. I know, but in my head, I just want a pouty Navarro, like, that was my favorite henchman.
He's like, oh well.
That was El Stevo.
That was my boy.
Oh my god.
It slides toward the bottom of the cliff where a photo shoot is taking place at a resort pool. Navarro gets on his phone.
He's headed for the resort.
Exterior, resort pool, day, video POV. A beautiful, sorry, I burped. A beautiful lagoon pool complete with a waterfall. Bikini models pose around the foliage. And in front of the camera is a polished SUV and Elena Fisher, late 20s. Elena is a beautiful woman, a tan blonde in a white bikini.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, what are they doing to Elena? No.
I know.
This isn't, yeah.
So if you haven't played the game, Elena, wait.
Hang on. I think if you keep reading, I think she's broadcasting something. So I think she's.
Okay. Here we go. She's enough of a pro to not let on she hates this current assignment.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's better.
Okay. Yep.
That's better because, like, Elena is the opposite of a bikini girl.
Yeah.
She's definitely a go-getter and she doesn't take shit from anybody. And yeah. So, like, when I read bikini, I'm like, oh, they changed her. She's no longer Elena.
Yeah.
That's what I thought too. This is Elena Fisher for Adventure TV. Today, we'll be diving off the coast of Brazil with some of the world's top swimwear models, sponsored by the all-new 2010 Cadillac Escalade.
And cut! Elena's smile drops. She walks over to the video village and watches the playback with the director and producers.
Come on, guys. There's a C-stand in the background and a flare off the fender.
The director sighs audibly and heads over to the crew. Guys, there's a C-stand in the shot! Elena grabs her iPhone and heads to the craft service table. Carl, 40s, her agent and friend, joins her.
Remind me how this is part of the plan?
This increases your on-camera experience, babe, and it ups your visibility.
So does porn.
I can set up that audition.
You're an awful agent.
Of course,
agent.
David O. Russell.
I know.
Yeah. You're an awful agent. You know that, don't you?
Just hang in there, kid. Everybody's gotta pay their dues.
Really? What dues did Wolf Blitzer pay?
He hosted Supermarket Sweep for his first two seasons.
Elena's eyes narrow, not believing it for a second.
Okay, Wolfie did the indie journalist route, broke some story on human rights violations, and that was his calling card.
What a whore.
Smash. The pulverized remains of the bar tumbles into the pool. The models scream. Nate bursts out of the water, causing the models to scream again. He puts his gun away, fixes his hair, and walks right for Elena. Afternoon. A thug erupts out of the foliage, firing. The bullet whizzes inches from Elena's face. Nate launches himself in a flying thicket. Oh, I don't know why. Nate launches himself in a flying tackle and breaks the thug's arm badly.
Oh, shit.
The gun drops to the deck. Nate headbutts him unconscious. Suddenly, more thugs rush out of the foliage. Nate grabs the phone out of Elena's hand. Sorry, emergency. Nate jumps into the polished Cadillac Escalade and disappears as his head ducks beneath the dash.
It doesn't have keys.
The Escalade starts up. Nate hotwired it in 6 seconds. He revs the engine and the Escalade peels out. Navarro's thugs give chase, leaving everyone else shell-shocked. Elena stares after him, less shocked than the others and more intrigued. Exterior, dock, day. Nate pulls up in the Escalade. leaving it running. He gets out, racing down the dock. His ear is to the phone. Sully, it's me. I got Drake's map. I'm headed to the trawler. Take the plane, and I'll text you the coordinates. Nate races for the dive trawler. Mm-hmm. Anchored at the far end when it suddenly explodes. The blast wave knocks Nate clear off the dock and into the water. Cut to interior, dry dock, night. Malcolm, 20s, Jamaican, uses a dirty rag to wipe engine oil off his head as he opens the supply closet. Inside, looking like a drowned rat, is Nate.
No.
I'm in a real tight spot here. Nate steps out of the closet, bringing with him a duffel bag he kept stashed there.
That wouldn't be why there are big guys with guns prowling around my shop, would it?
I need a boat.
I just fixed your boat.
Nate winces as he removes a piece of shrapnel from his shoulder. He pulls gauze from his... reading is hard, guys.
It's okay. Take it one at a time.
Yeah. He pulls gauze from his duffel for the wound. And it's now at the bottom of the bay. I thought you guarantee your work.
I guarantee if my clients pay.
I told you I'm gonna get the money. But, see, That's where I need your help. I need a boat, a dive trawler. If I don't get out of here before those guys find me, I can't get you your money, see?
No, I don't see. Nathan, you are a liar and a cheat, and I'll have nothing more to do with you. Have you noticed all the bad things happening in your life lately? You're cursed, Nathan, judged by the good Lord himself. He telling you to change your ways, but you ain't gonna change.
I'll take the dinghy with a winch.
Won't help. Can't help. There's only one dive thrawler in the bay, and that lady with the film crews got it rented out for the rest of the week.
Nate smiles, gears turning. He closes the first aid kit. Really? Mm-hmm. Exterior, resort, restaurant balcony, night. An elegant restaurant balcony, candlelit tables, the moon's reflection glistening in the undulating ocean. Elena sits at the table in the far corner of the balcony, looking at the screen of her brand new iPhone. Suddenly, Nate appears.
Is this thing sponsored by Apple?
I know, this is all the product. They put product placement in this product shit.
I was going to say, because they have a catalog, and they say iPhone, like a million times. Mm-hmm. And now that they're writing her in, staring at it, I'm like, okay. Yep. Okay.
Product placement.
Mm-hmm. Suddenly, Nate appears. He's wearing a sports jacket. He even shaved. Cleans up pretty good when he needs to. He sits down across from her and slides her phone to her. Now she has two.
Oh yeah, math.
Thanks for loaning me your phone. Oh, your car is drowned by the dock. Oh, not down any- by the dock.
I mean, it could be drowned too, knowing.
Not anymore. The police said someone left it unlocked. With the engine running. It's probably entering Paraguay by now.
Surname. The big auto theft ring operates out of Suriname.
And you're a man who knows such things?
I'm a man who knows such things. The waiter appears with two drinks. He sets a drink in front of Elena and a beer in front of Nate. Elena's surprised but tries to hide it. She takes a sip.
Mojito, you know what I drink?
Do I?
All right, you've made your approach. You've bought me a drink. Now would be when you tell me a story. Oh, I know. Tell the one where the men with machine guns try and murder you.
Sorry, most of that is confidential.
Of course, I'll just be too intrigued and have to pursue you for the information. And oh, so slowly. I'll pry it out of you, despite great reluctance. Because for some reason, maybe it's the moon, maybe the drinks, but tonight, you find me irresistible.
Nate extends a hand across the table. Elena takes it. Nate, mysterious stranger.
Elena, intrigued reporter. Can I ask you a question?
I was hoping you would. She leans in. Nate leans in as well. She motions with a finger, beckoning him closer. She whispers in his ear.
What do you want with my boat?
Nate's smile and assurance crack. He's shocked and it takes a moment too long to try and hide it. Your boat?
I mean, a dive trawler blew up right near where you left the Escalade, and those men with the machine guns were crawling all over the docks. Did I make an incorrect assumption that you might be looking for a replacement boat?
Just the hint of a smile. She's playing with him. Oh, you're good. You're very good.
Thank you. I am aware. So we've established I've got a boat. What is it you're prepared to pony up for the barter?
Nate flashes his smile.
And please realize that your charm and the pleasure of your company, well, very nice, I'm sure, are not what I'm in the market for.
Nate furrows his brow. This isn't going the way he planned, but he's quick enough on his feet.
Oh, thank you for telling us that.
I know. You seem like the kind of woman who doesn't go to the bathroom without a plan. Okay.
What a line.
I know. I'm guessing this conversation would have ended before your mojito.
I mean, I usually go to the bathroom with a plan.
Mm. Plan of action. Oh,
I have an idea of what I'm going to do in there.
Oh my God.
I just wing it.
He maps it out. Mm. And then
like, all right. Piss comes out here.
Yeah. Don't miss.
Let's end your notes. Whatever you do, do not miss.
I'm guessing this conversation would have ended before your mojito arrived if you didn't know exactly what you want from me. Elena nods. He's got her there.
Everybody wants something from everybody, right? I'm a reporter. You're a guy being chased by men with machine guns. What do you think I want?
Nate smiles broadly. A deal is struck. All right, if I remember the first game, the only reason why Elena joins Nate on the mission is because there's just no other choice. She's she inadvertently gets wrapped up in a scheme.
So in the first game, it actually starts out with it's Sully, Nate, and Elena on a boat, and Elena is documenting them. I forgot what they were doing, but they get like attacked by pirates.
Yeah.
I think they found like Sir Francis's coffin or something, and it's supposed to have a journal.
Right, and I think from what I remember, she like heard of the story and she wanted to document it for like her own sake to sell or something like that. She didn't really care about like Nate or Sully at that point. She just wanted the story.
Yeah, and then plus, they got like, shot at. And then Elena doesn't even want to be a part of getting shot at, if I remember, right?
Yeah. And I mean, like, I know they're changing it up in this movie. Yeah. But yeah, I think it was more so just like they started out together. She was pretty much like over it. Well, like after they got shot, or after they're getting shot at each other, and then when they found out the location of like the whatever the location of the treasure or whatnot, then she was like, "Okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming with you."
Basically, what we're trying to get at here, folks, is the game does everything way better than this script so far.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, usually, what happens with video game adaptations into film? So I'm a little hesitant on Halo, but that's a different story.
I mean, so far this is. On the better side of the video game adaptations, but
so far, yeah,
we're only 18 pages in.
It's like, what better way to introduce two of like the love interests than literally crashing through in a fucking bamboo style bar into the water?
I'm just curious if David O. Russell even played the game or if he just like wrote a synopsis.
I feel like in this case, he probably either watched a couple videos or he, like you said, did research.
Maybe
I feel
he
like
knows.
That's a lot of what writers do. Like, if they've never played the games and don't want to, that's usually what will happen. Is they'll just do a shit ton of research and then go into it.
I mean, it's probably faster just to play the game.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
I totally agree.
Later, several dishes lie partially touched. A wine bottle 3/4 empty. Lana and Nate both lean in, close to the lone candle illuminating them. At 16, he made his first transatlantic voyage. By 20, he had robbed the fabled silver train. And by 26, he had raided half of the strongholds of the Spanish Main. Sir Francis Drake was England's greatest mariner, and probably the best treasure hunter in the world has ever known. And then, right at the height of his fame and power, he dies. Suddenly. He is quickly buried at sea in a hidden location off the coast of Panama. Why? Why not the noble funeral back in England he earned? And what about his fortune, only a fraction of which has ever been accounted for? Finding his coffin is the key to one of the greatest historical mysteries, and I know where it is. Nate unfurls the map, laying it out between them.
Is it a map? There's no words on it.
Exactly. No windrows showing which way is north. No location names. No legend and no key. Drake encrypted his map so they were useless to anyone but himself.
So then how do you read it?
Nate pulls the rawhide cord from his neck and shows Elena the silver ring. The Drake ring. This is what started me down this road. Drake once called it the key to the adventure of his life. Nate shows Elena the inside of the ring. Markings. Words. Oh.
Sic parvis magna?
Greatness comes from small beginnings, the Drake family motto. And that's not the most interesting marking. Elena notices one other mark, the symbol of an eye. Nate rolls the ring along the map until it finds the same symbol, the eye. He stands the ring up so the eye inside of the ring lines up exactly over the one on the map.
I don't understand.
Nate puts his finger to his lips. Shh, just watch. Words do not do this justice. Nate takes the candle on the table and moves it to the edge of the map, where sure enough, a tiny candle symbol is. Nate places the candle atop its symbol. And it's all capitalized, folks, so. And as the candle light shines through the hoop of the ring, the map changes.
Wait, how? It's a ring. It's like, finger width. How does like, what?
The grooves forming the words.
Wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Sorry, it took me a little bit. I had to reread that line. Yeah. So literally the entirety of the map is illuminated with one little tiny ring.
Is that, I thought they're like looking inside the ring.
I think it explains they're looking in the next paragraph. Oh,
okay, we need to stop getting ahead of ourselves. Let's keep
the grooves forming the words inside the ring reflect lines of light crisscrossing along the map. Maybe it was what we're... Two of these lines of light cross the series of curved lines and making them now readable as words.
What?
Suddenly, one coastline reads, Playa Arhania. And an island in the middle of the map reads Isla Papa or Popa.
I'm just trying to understand how this works. Like he holds up a ring to the candle and the light of the candle reflects from the ring and makes words on the page.
Yeah, so what I'm thinking is kind of like the Lord of the Rings ring where there's like inscription in the interior of the ring. And so when you light it, it
shows
banks off onto like the paper.
But
that's what I'm getting.
It's a candle. It's not that bright. There's not that much reflection of a tiny ring.
Yeah.
Also,
was just holding the candle up to the ring, and then like in the inside of the ring, inscription appears.
Yeah.
But it seems like the light through the ring.
The reflection off of the ring is lighting up the specific parts of the map, like, and that's what's making.
Why couldn't he have just like made it a flashlight and not a candle?
Also, I haven't played the game in a while, so I could be forgetting. But like, was the ring? The ring might have been used to a certain extent, but was it used to this extent in the game? Because I thought that the ring was like his token that
you
had. Yeah,
it's been a while. Yeah, it's mostly a token.
I don't think it's used in the first one.
Maybe it answered a question to something, but it wasn't necessarily like maybe a word on the ring. I don't know. Anyway.
You have to hold it at a specific place next to the candle for that to even work. And the fact that you just got it on the first try.
Yeah, it's a little odd.
Well, Nate's a fucking genius, bro. What the fuck?
He knows his shit, bro.
Yeah.
Normally, I would say video game logic, but this isn't a video game.
Mm-hmm. In the final two lines of light, they cross each other in the middle of the sea, forming an X. Elena shivers with excitement. She puts her hand on Nate's accidentally. They look into each other's eyes. The moment is electric.
Oh, God.
And then she pulls away.
So what now? How exactly does treasure hunting work? Is it legal to pull up 300-year-old coffins? Shouldn't you be telling some museum or maybe the English government?
Those thieves? I do my best to steer clear of them.
And the big guys with the guns? They thieves too? What makes you the good guy in all this? Why should I trust you?
Nate's losing her, and he knows it. He takes Elena's notepad and starts writing on it. There are no good guys or bad guys. There are only lines and the men who cross them. He slides the notepad over to her.
What is this?
A contract, granting you total and exclusive access to the greatest treasure hunt in modern times. Then Elena notices signature.
Nathan Drake?
Nate flashes that million-dollar smile and winks. Why do you think he's been an obsession of mine? Come on, let's go dig up Grandpa. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where we are stopping for part one of our adventures into the Uncharted script. Stay tuned for part two to see whether or not they dig up Grandpa, which will be coming out soon, hopefully. With all that, if you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it, and we hope you enjoyed yourselves. If you want to stay up to date, make sure to click that subscribe button or follow or whatever the various apps let you do to stay up to date on your podcast. If you want to follow our social media accounts, you can. We have the links in the bio as well as our email address in case you want to hit that up, complain or compliment, whatever you do, it's there. Again, thanks for listening and stay safe out there. Bye-bye.